and welcome to episode 36 of season 9 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the last two completely terrible Die Hard movies, Die Hard 4 and 5, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me for a little bit of a masochistic nature is Niall McGowan of The Bat Minute. Welcome back this season, Niall, or maybe you don't want to be welcomed back. I don't know.
I'm very glad to receive your warm welcome, Rob, but I would like to remind you, this is not a hugging podcast. Okay?
No, it is not. It is not. That goes 100% along with what we will be talking about over the next however long it takes us to get through these 5 minutes.
Hopefully it takes us about 3 minutes to get through the 5 minutes.
I'd like it to go a little bit longer than that. You know, I think people are expecting a certain level of discussion of 5 minutes. I mean, again, we're not going to get to the same level of what I've done on all my previous seasons, but you know, we'll get there. We'll figure it out.
No, I'm still willing to come in and give John McClane's Last Ride a good old shake.
That's right.
But yeah.
So why don't you start off by telling people? I mean, you weren't on during the first half of the season, so you know you didn't get a chance to talk about Live Free or Die Hard. And you know, now you will have a chance to talk about A Good Day to Die Hard, which, you know, again, I don't think there's any good day to watch this movie, but whatever, that goes without saying. So what's your background with these two movies? Like, do you remember when you first saw them? Do you remember, what do you think of them? You know,
well, I'm quite surprised that, like, to hear you say that it sounded like you had like double disdain, because 4, I don't mind so much. I think over here it's called Die Hard 4.0.
Four starts off well, but then it just completely loses things when it turns into this really stupid action movie, which has you know, cars flying up in the air, a truck taking on a taking on an F-35 jet. You know, it just gets it goes too far. That's what it is.
Yeah. I think my attitude towards I don't think, because over here we always called it Die Hard 4.0.
Right. Okay. We've debated whether that's a better title for the movie or not, because it's dealing with technology and stuff like that. We don't get to choose the title of a movie. So
To be fair, like, I've always thought the Die Hard as a title is a bad title. Like, all of them have a bad title. Like, Die Harder is like the best of them because it's stupid. Like, but it's, you know, it's kind of funny because it's like, well, Die Harder. But Die Hard as an actual title, as perfect as the film is, I was like, it's a bad title. I wouldn't call it Die Hard. And then Die Hard with a Vengeance is just like, I don't even know what that means. Like, I guess there's a vengeance in the film, but like,
and the vengeance is the twist, you know.
Yes, yeah. I guess you just think, like, he himself, like, he is Die Hard McClane, like, he's like John Die Hard, right? So he's back with a vengeance, I guess, is the thing that, you know, you could take it that way,
right?
And then Live Free or Die Hard, I don't think when that came out, I'd ever heard the phrase. It's kind of I guess it's supposed to be Live Free or Die. And I was like, I'd never heard that as a phrase. So it meant nothing to me when they said Live Free or Die Hard. So Die Hard 4.0, I was also like, yeah, whatever, you know. But I don't mind the fourth one pretty much at all. One, because I'm a big fan of Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Two, because I'm an even bigger fan of Timothy Olyphant. And also, I managed to sort of like disconnect it. And had it sort of like, if you view it as not a Die Hard film, and just as one of like 16 Blocks, or one of those other sort of like, yeah, pretty good sort of Bruce Willis thrillers that he made, it's actually a perfectly fine film. You know, I'm just like, oh, I can take this. If you put it in the world of Die Hard, it's like, oh no, it doesn't compare at all. But it's still as a mid tier Bruce film. It's like, yeah, it's fun. Like, it's a totally fine film. I remember when it came out distinctly because I was still collecting the now defunct Total Film magazine, which is recently went completely out of business. It was out of print for a while, went all digital, and now the digital version is gone as well. But they give away a free, I think they called it like a bottle vest. It was a little miniature vest that you could put over a beer bottle, and it just said like Die Hard on it. It's like this little rubber, like a little plasticky rubber thing, and it just I in my bedroom for ages afterwards, I had like an old beer bottle wearing a John McClane vest that just
Ooh.
said Die Hard. I thought that was a pretty cool giveaway. So I had warm, and I remember it came out when I was in university. I think it might have been my first or second year. It was one of the first films I learned how to torrent because it didn't as a student. Of course, I should also say if anyone asks, I didn't torrent that, and I watched it through my
No, of course
school
not.
domain.
No.
Of course.
I don't even know what that word means, and don't explain it to me.
Yes. But like, because I was a student, I didn't have a lot of money. But I remember, we had I went watched it in a friend's bedroom on a laptop, and it was like, yeah, that was there. You go. It was fine. And then until I was brought in for this recording, in my mind, that was the end of the Die Hard films because I have selective memory, and I chose to believe that they didn't make any more of them. But no, yeah, good day to Die Hard. I just remember all just like the just hear everything I heard about it. I was just like, I don't want this. I don't like this. The fourth one was already on a downward spiral, even though it's like enjoyable enough. But it's like you're not gonna be able to. And then every announcement that came with it was like, don't like that. Don't like the sound of it. And I think Bruce was on a bit of a losing streak at the time as well. So it was just like, and then it came out, and it was just like I watched it once, hated it, absolutely, just found nothing redeemable about it. And I'm gonna confess to you, Rob, in my career in Movies by Minutes, I'll always go back and rewatch the thing, even if it's a film I didn't particularly like, because I want to be like, well, you gotta be zhuzhed up and ready to talk about it. And I had ample time to go in to prepare to immerse myself in It's a Good Day to Die Hard. And then I came to the epiphany of I didn't have to watch it again. And I didn't have to spend the 2 hours going through it again. And it's not that I was not prepared. I just outright refused to watch it again. Like, oh no, I'll happily talk about the 15 minutes that we've got coming up. Like, I would never try to shortchange anybody that way, but like I won't put myself through the ordeal of watching it again. And yeah, even watching these 15 minutes, you're just like, it's got so much of what's wrong with the film. And as you alluded to there, like the second half of Die Hard 4 is perfectly surmised within this scene, basically. And literally, even almost from the opening line, which I like, as I remember, was part of what was like heavy in the publicity and stuff for it as well. Yeah, I remember it coming and going, and no one coming to his defense. Like it was a unanimous just like no from the world. The likes of which you rarely see. It's always nowadays, particularly with the internet, there's always somebody ready to defend whatever. But no, this one
You're
was
saying
just
there's
like,
nobody out there who's going to defend this movie as a good movie?
I'm sure you probably you might well like in the 35 episodes or however many you've done prior,
21,
maybe you've
21, 20, I'm having 21
21.
episodes of this season.
The 21 episodes
Or
prior,
this
you
half
might
of
have
this
found
season.
somebody who's like, this is the best one. And
No.
I don't know, they probably were like kicked in the head by a horse or something. There
Yeah.
must be something wrong with them if they think that.
No, there is nobody who said that.
No, I think like well, and since too, it's somewhat colored by like the well, what did Bruce know about his condition as well? Because you're just like I know he wanted to do a sixth one as well, like a kind of swan song,
Yeah.
and it's kind of because we don't know at the times of like at what stages he was aware of what was happening to him and stuff, but it does also now have a kind of thing like maybe he already knew. And he was like, I need to get, because this whole thing is like why he was making so much absolutely terrible films where he had the earpiece and stuff, towards the immediately prior to his retirement, was because he was just trying to accumulate wealth to leave his family.
Right.
So he might have been like, yeah, Die Hard. That's a guaranteed money spinner, is, you know, that franchise. And even though he was so protective over it, you know, in interviews previously, where he always, you know, I think he referred to himself as a kind of like the gatekeeper of the Die Hard franchise, and, you know, quality control couldn't get past him and stuff. It feels like he did just give up with this. I feel, if you asked Bruce Willis at the time, like, infamously, he had an interview where it seemed like he wasn't all that impressed with the film and stuff. Like, it's that's all stuff we can talk about, like, later on. But, like, I remember more the publicity around it, and the kind of like the lackluster vibe from everyone involved in it. That's when it came out. So in my mind, I almost do have it as if this was Bruce fully aware of like what was coming, and been like, I just need to get some cash, basically. And that's why you have Die Hard 5 at, like, in the condition that it's in, and also like the plans for Die Hard 6, or the you know, the prequel movie that was going to be bookended by him or whatever. That's tragically now. I'd say tragically, probably for the best.
Well,
Really,
after
obviously.
watching this movie, you know it's for the best.
Yes, yeah. I did note too in the series Wikipedia page, they're like, oh, Disney Plus is talking about developing a Die Hard series. It's like, Die Hard is Bruce, though. Like, it's one of those ones. It's like, there's certain things you can take off with other people, and you can reiterate the character and stuff like that. That's just like, it's, you know, the. He was part of the lightning in the bottle of the first film, that they, you know, they kind of recaptured for the third one, but like, it's very much like, you don't have to make John McClane into like a, you know, a Frankenstein's monster or a Dracula, where you're just like, oh, we just do this all the time. It's not like Macbeth or something where you can constantly like reinterpret the character. It's just
Right,
like
he's not a James
John
Bond.
McClane.
That you can even just use a modern version, a modern example. James Bond. He's not a James Bond. That's
He's
what it
not
comes
James
down to.
Bond, even though in this. Well, he refers to himself something like, I do remember him saying that he's like the 007 of New Jersey or something like that at one point.
Ooh, very nice. You see, you didn't rewatch it, and you still remembered that he says the
I'd say
007 of
that's.
Plainview, New Jersey.
Yeah. So it's a. And within, you know, this scene as well, he's doing stuff. It's like, oh, James Bond would do that. John McClane wouldn't do that, though. Even so much like, I don't, you know, the push is into talking about the five minutes we've got here. But even like, the first line, I remember being very heavy in the publicity. And now, what do you think of the, you know, the line in question about the hugging fa we're not a hugging family,
Okay,
and McClane?
we will get there. We will get there.
Okay, okay.
But what I first wanted to talk about was the fact that, I mean, okay, this is the ninth season that I'm doing this, so it's my 10th movie because we're doing two movies this season that I've done minute by minute. And I don't know what your experience has been when you've done movies minute by minute, but I've always enjoyed the movies more after doing them minute by minute, no matter how much I love them beforehand. You know, you have that added bonus to them. And I was really curious what was going to happen with this movie because of that. Because again, I rewatched this movie about a year ago and I rated it 1 out of 10. That's how bad I thought it was. Okay. And, you know, I went back and rewatched it right before I started, you know, recording episodes for this season. And I was shocked that I actually upgraded my view of it. It upgraded it to a 2. Yeah.
Well, let's not say things we can't take back here, Rob. Yeah, come on.
No, I could always rewatch it and change that. You know, that's not something that's set in stone. You know, every time I watch a movie,
It
I
settles
get
on
to
a
reevaluate it.
nice.
You
It's like
know.
a, you'll settle on a nice 1.5 at some point,
No,
I'm
I don't do half ranks. So
sure.
that won't work. But the bottom line is that you know this movie is terrible. There's no question about it. You know, and you know, even if you want to say, okay, let's not compare it to the other Die Hard movies, this is just a horrendous movie. Nothing. There's so many things that make no sense whatsoever. They
It's
don't
a,
even
it's
try
it's
to
it's
explain things.
like, I was, as I said, I didn't rewatch it, but I did go like, well, I'll just like to make sure I'm sort of somewhat fresh, I'll at least read the plot summary. And midway through the plot summary, I was like, oh, I don't care. I don't care about any of this. Like, I don't
Exactly. And
fancy
when you're
it.
watching it and you say that, that's even worse. You know?
Yeah. Because, well, you know where it's going to go at the end as well. It's like, you know he's going to make up with with Jack, and you know they're gonna, you know, go back to, you know, and it's just like, who cares? Like, it's just whatever, you know.
One of the things that I've mentioned numerous times is that I think the idea, both for Live Free or Die Hard and this movie, A Good Day to Die Hard, was that, okay, let's pass on the baton to a younger character who can then become, you know, the new John McClane type of character. And so you had Justin Long in Die Hard 4.0, which, you know, as good as he wasn't good enough to be able to carry something on his own at that point.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't great anyway, but he was fine. You know, they had some nice banter between them, you know, dealing with the difference in age and computers and technology and stuff like that. So, yes, it was fun. But you come to this movie and you're like, okay, they're trying to do that with Jai Courtney. Jai Courtney is going to be able to be an action hero. He's more – and you just watch this movie and you're like, I don't want to watch movies about Jack McClane.
No. You know? Here's a question, though. I'm sure someone's probably asked this prior, but, like, you've spent, you know, a whole movie with Lucy McClane. Would you have preferred it if they skipped a couple of years and it was Lucy coming back and she was the one who was now estranged but working as, like, a CIA operative or whatever? And it was just like, yeah, say it's jumped 10 years. Particularly now because Mary Elizabeth Winstead is, like, an action star these days. Like, her... Yeah, she's moved. She has her own. She was like, they had that like action franchise. They were kind of attempting to get going with her.
Mm-hmm.
What was it called? Kate. And she is like, you know, she's kind of going. You know, she was Huntress and et cetera, et cetera. So I could imagine I would at least have cared a bit more had it been like, oh, Lucy's back, and it's like, yeah, something's happened between. But it's always all these films always have to have like. People aren't talking to each other, and there has to be a big like redemption, and like you never just go in. They never think of any other family conflict beyond like, oh, now they're just not talking to each other, so we have to see them bond again, and stuff. Like that's always the angle they approach from, and like it gets tiresome after a while, where it's just like, you know, you go into Indiana Jones 5, and it's like, yeah, him and Marianne aren't talking, and then it's like, and you go into, you know, Star Wars 7, and it's like Han Solo and Princess Leia, oh, they're not talking, but you have to see them come back together, and it's like. Okay.
Well, that would have been interesting if they brought Holly into, you know, to this movie. that would have been very interesting to see. But
I would have at least appreciated like seeing like her bounce off John McClane at least, like, because you know that I guess you get a version of it with Indy because they're both, you know, at this stage of their respective franchises are just gruff. You know, weary old men. But like, I think John McClane classically has a bit more wit about him than Indiana Jones. Indy's like, he is, you know, he's a clever guy, you know, he's a doctor for God's sake. But he's not got as much of a smart aleck kind of, you know, not as much as a smart alecky vibe as McClane. So like with Helly being a bit of a smart ass herself, having her bouncing off John McClane would have been at least interesting, or maybe would have had some good dialogue or something. Him, you know, John McClane and Jack McClane is, it all feels like there was a lot of it was like written in a vacuum of like, oh, this will be a good line between John McClane and his son. Just insert that there somewhere. And then it just all feels very perfunctory and like it's not organic. They don't feel like I've never in watching it, you know, back in the day, I never felt like this was his son. I didn't feel like this was John McClane, like either. Like even in rewatching these 15 minutes, I was just like, that's Bruce just pouting and just squinting and looking around and stuff. And at no point was I like, that's the same guy from Nakatomi Plaza. That's the same guy who was, you know, driving friggin' the taxi through Central Park and stuff. It just felt like it's Bruce Willis standing with a gun, pouting, and you know,
right. And also in this movie, when they don't have those one-liners to add in along the way, they just have them swear. You know?
Yeah.
And you know, we've seen John McClane in the past. He swears more in this movie than he did in any of the other movies. You know, not that I'm saying it's bad if a character swears, but you know, we've gotten to know who this character is, and now here he's in Russia and He's 58 years old. He's crankier, and he's cursing even more. You know,
Yeah.
and it doesn't flow.
It's also,
it feels like, somewhat forced.
He's got that thing as well where they're doubling down on all the guy's flaws. Whereas, you know, usually when you're watching people develop over a film, it's like, or even over a franchise, it's like you have to see them get like gradually like better instead of resetting all the time. And you can argue that, like, you know, again, like a James Bond, like James Bond starts every movie the same as he was the first time, you know? Or Indiana Jones, where it's like, he always just sort of resets back to being, you know, skeptical, but, you know, intrepid explorer in Indiana Jones. But, like, again, you know, within the opening of this, you have this whole thing about, like, we're not a hugging family. That's right. And, you know, and it has this kind of, like, the gruffness of the McClane family, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, it feels like from the first movie, back then, it was like, yeah, he's a bad communicator. And he's a troubled man to be in a family scenario with and that's why he's so estranged from Holly. And then by the end of the movie, they've sort of come back together, and you feel like he's going to be a better man now. And like he's literally hugging Holly at the end.
Right.
And then you go four movies later, and he's back to just like, no, we don't do that. I was like, I've seen you do it all like over and over again. Like, what the hell, man? So yeah, it feels like John, like, he's just doomed to be like, he never gets better as a person. He only seems to get better as, like, as they say in a later chunk this week, at killing bad guys. That's all
right.
he's good for. And it's like, no, he was a human man. I believed in him for, like, we were introduced to him as a guy who was having relatable marriage problems and was going through stuff that was like, yeah, people would just be young adults would be going through this, you know. And now it's just like, yeah, literally jumps out of a skyscraper and just walks it off at one point. And it doesn't even have to say like a, it doesn't even have to have a reaction shot anymore of like, holy moly, that was close. So it's just sort of like, yeah, that's a day in the life for John McClane is
That's
doing
right.
this.
I'm just gonna
Which is
brush
why I
myself
was,
off and that'll be it, you know.
yeah, which is why I was so opposed again to them doing the proposed prequel. Because you know that would have been a big bombastic action thing where he was just like brushing everything off. And it would deter from the first film where it felt like, no, he's really, really out of his depth. Like it's insane what he's having to go through, and he's barely making it. And he's constantly bricking it. And like, again, he has development over it where it's like he's emotionally unavailable at the start of the first film, you know,
Right.
adding to his marriage woes. And then he's able to talk to, you know, Powell, a guy he doesn't even really know, and is able to have an emotional moment with him over the radio, talking about, like, just tell my wife and, you know, this, that, and the other, and kind of break down a little bit. And it's like, yeah, he's opening it up. He's learning to register his feelings, and, like, it's putting things in perspective for him. And now we jump to this, where it's, we're not a hugging family. That's right. And that was used in the publicity as if, like, yeah, that's right, badass men don't hug. And it's like, that's not what I ever got from Die Hard. Was like, yeah, he's a badass guy who doesn't have time for emotions and stuff like that. It's like,
right.
it's crazy to me. Yeah. Awful, awful film.
Okay, so let's actually start talking about this segment, these 5 minutes.
Yes.
So episode 36 begins with John offering Jack a hug, and ends mm-hmm. with Alec regretting his decisions in life.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay. So we ended things yesterday with, you know, Yuri finally being reunited with Irina. Again, we'll get into the craziness of their entire conversation, which makes no sense once you know what is really happening in the movie. You know, it makes sense if you don't know what's going on, but once you do know what's going on, it makes completely no sense whatsoever as to why they
yeah.
would do it. And you know, as John and Jack are looking on, you know, so John turns to Jack and goes, "Need a hug?" And he goes, "We're not really a hugging family." He goes, "That's right." So again, it's just very funny. The, you know, you already mentioned the whole fact that, you know, about, you know, like, we've seen John hug Holly and that's it.
Yeah.
But the question is what are they trying to say by this line about we're not really a hugging family? You know, I mean, we know that every member of the McClane family, besides John, refuses to acknowledge the fact that their name is McClane until they get saved by John McClane. You know, like we even saw on Jack's arrest report, saw that was mostly in Russian, but it still said Jack Gennaro.
Yeah.
You know, so was that his name because he's deep undercover? I don't know.
Deep undercover. It's like literally, well, it's his mom's name. It's like they'll never find him that way.
That's right.
To be fair, though, Jack Gennaro does sound like a cool name, to be fair. Like, I'd almost give him as being like, it's Jack McClane's okay, but it sounds like a cliched action movie guy name. Jack Gennaro sounds like, ooh, it's got, you know, it's got a kind of, the it's got the illusion of alliteration in there, because it's JG, but it sounds like JJ.
Right.
So, you know, if I had the option, maybe I would have gone for Jack Gennaro, just because it's like, well, it sounds, makes me sound like a kind of, it makes me sound like a quick-witted, light-footed badass, you know, instead of
right.
Jack McClane's just like, yeah, it just sounds like, you know, someone from like a Robert Ludlum, like a C-tier Robert Ludlum novel or something. But,
right. So
what I got from that interaction, because I think it's McClane Senior, it's McClane Senior's reaction of, that's right. Like, he's almost like a little proud thing. It indicates that prior to all this happening, in Jack's raising, perhaps he had at times had reached out for hugs or had emotionally opened up to his father and had been, like, rebuked in some way. And
We know that in the movie they will talk about, you know, and they have already talked a little bit, and they will even more, about experiences, you know, when Jack was growing up and the problems they had and things like that. They allude to things. They don't go too far into it.
Yeah.
But
it makes it feel, know, like John,
the home life was not necessarily a pleasant one for Jack.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
But it makes it feel like his dad was once again emotionally unavailable, but as if he deliberately raised his son to be this way. To be like, we're not a hugger family. That's right. As if, like, you know, that's what the decision I've made is, to toughen you up, kid, to make sure that you can, you know, you can fight on the wing of an F1 and all this kind of stuff. Like, you know, I want to see you, you know, literally battering guys on the, you know, the bodies of stealth jets and stuff like that, because that's what your old man did.
Right.
When they're like, well, what the hell was, what was John Senior? Like, what kind of an asshole was he?
Right.
But it feels as if, yeah, this was, again, it's because it's delivered with the kind of like, isn't this cool? Kind of, you know, it's not like this should be a very regrettable moment for them, the fact that they're not a hugging family, and they wouldn't feel that.
Well, again, it's even like showing that they're tough guys, they don't need to.
Yeah, and you see even like later in this, within, you know, an upcoming chunk, that like McClane once again does a kind of little condescending, like, oh, I guess you're gonna need your milk and go to bed with a cookie, and oh, poor little boy. It seems to be alluded that that's what he was like Jack's whole life, was just every time he was ever, you know, in any way down or needed support from his father, all he got was like a, oh, poor little baby, and just, you know, trying to, that's John McClane's way of trying to, which would have been all well and good, but we, like, Jack McClane was like, what, 2 when Die Hard happened? And so again, it's like, oh, this guy didn't learn anything from his experiences.
Right.
And as you know, having his wife in peril and like having his friends in peril and stuff like that. So it just makes John McClane seem like the absolute worst. Whereas I feel they're trying to like promote it as if like, yeah, he's cool though, right? Because that's like, they're a cool, badass, tough guy family. And it's like, you know, Dom Toretto would never, you know. It's just like, this is not, but so much of it is like, it goes on within these 5 minutes too. Such a dated mentality that goes back to a time even before Die Hard, I feel. But we'll get to that when we get to it.
Right. Did you know that there is there's what's known as the International Hug Day?
No, I did not. I did not know that it was international. And now I'm worried because I'm in a public-facing job. So if like we have to do anything to do with International Hug Day.
No, okay.
I don't want to know about it.
Okay, it's so you're also not from a hugging family, you're saying?
I hug my family. I'm not a big hugger of people though, in general. I always have the bit of the I was saying the other day, because I went to let's talk about it later actually, when we talk about, like, best franchises. But I went this past weekend to a Twilight marathon with a bunch of ladies from my previous job, because, like, keep in touch with them, and it's like, oh, it's nice to meet up sometimes. They're doing Twilight as a marathon. I'll
Why?
pop along. Like,
Okay.
what? And but they're, like, very much like, oh, they're all hugging, and like, they were giving each other temporary tattoos and all this kind of stuff, because, like, that's just their way. And then every time I was hugged, I just had, like, the T-Rex arms on the other side, and I'm just very like, nah, I just never. I do know some of my best friends are like, guys, we'll show up, they'll give you a proper big bear hug and stuff, and every time I'm like, it's never been fully reciprocated, but yet you keep trying, and I appreciate at least you're trying. But no, I'm not a big hugger of people, but it's more a personal space thing rather
Okay,
than like a
I
like
can
a in...
definitely hear that. So,
yeah.
International Hug Day is January 21st,
Okay.
and the reason that January 21st was chosen is because it fell between Christmas, New Year's, Valentine's Day, and they found that that time of year, that's when people were in generally low spirits. So they
Oh,
decided
okay.
that it would be a good thing to have this annual hugging day in order to show people that even strangers care. Because the whole idea is
Yeah.
we're supposed to, like, hug a stranger and stuff like that.
Yes.
And then we get a shot of Yuri and Irina talking, and they're talking in Russian, so they must assume that nobody can understand what they're saying.
Yes.
And then he says to her, "We just have one to get one thing, and then we're leaving Moscow for good." "Okay?" And she says, "Okay." And then she goes, "Who are they?" And he goes, then he switches to English and goes, "The young one works for the CIA, and the older one's his father, Americans." Again, this is such terrible dialogue, because first of all, the fact that both Yuri and Irina have set this all up, and it's a plan, to deceive everybody. So if they're speaking in Russian, and they're speaking quietly, and I'm not even sure if John and Jack can hear what they're saying, why don't they say, like, why do they need to pretend that they have this plan?
Yeah. Well, I guess you never know whether either the McLeans might speak Russian, I guess, maybe.
Maybe, but again, I mean, I know that Jack has been in Russia for like a year or whatever it is, so he probably does know a little bit of Russian. That's fine. But it's just very strange the way that they have this conversation, and then to say that the younger one works for the CIA and the older one's his father. And guess what? They're Americans. Well, if he works for the CIA.
I would love to, like, and his father, he was in, like, the thing in the building in L.A. And I'm like, oh my
Oh, okay.
God,
Oh,
this thing in
him.
the
Oh, we better be careful. We
it's
better be
called the thing in
careful
the
when we
building.
eventually go to Chernobyl.
Yeah.
That's.
Oh, that was a big shocker from reading the Oh no, that's in the and then, like, oh, that's right, Chernobyl comes into this as well, which is like, it feels like, oh, it's a good, not only is it an awful film, it's also potentially a smack in the face to any fans of the franchise who had members of their family involved in Chernobyl, was to be found out. It's like, no, we're going to cheapen that as well.
That's right. And then she says, "Then thank God for them." And then he says, "There's something." Then John and Jack are looking and watching them as this is going on. And then John turns to Jack and goes, "There's something not good about this. Just shut up, all right? Because I'm telling you, Jack, this smells bad. Just stop, okay? This might seem like a totally
All
foreign
the
context,
deals.
you know? I know you'd love to just run in and making up." But like any professional, I have a plan. So let's just stick to it, okay? Just move your plan along. So again, this is pointless dialogue. These two people are, Jack and John are arguing over something so stupid. I mean, I like the fact that we see that John still has his instincts. He knows that something's strange here. He's like, anytime I've met a bad guy, he's really not who he says he is. So,
Yes.
so,
That's
hey,
it'd be like
John McClane quality.
it'd be finding out then, it's like, what's this guy's name? It's like, he says his name is Yuri Clay. Like, wait a minute. The guy that's I don't trust anyone who says their last name's Clay, god damn it.
That's right. He's actually the long lost brother of he's Yuri Gruber.
The Grubers, they got around Europe, basically.
Yes, they definitely did.
I think that seed spread far.
I think Jack said earlier that he doesn't really have a plan, but now he says, I do have a plan. So he keeps changing his mind with that whole thing, about what his plan is. And what's his plan? His plan is to say, okay, Yuri, come on, grab the key. Let's get out of here. let's not waste time right now as, we're trying to stay safe. And then he goes, okay, it'll take just a moment.
And it's like, I just wonder, like, why is it all, because everything about it feels like it's a first draft. Like, it really has, like, this would be all placeholder stuff until they wrote, like, the proper script. Like, it was just needed, like, oh, this is the bare bones of a thing. And we'll spruce it up, obviously, and, by the time, like, maybe five drafts down the line, hey, we've got a pretty polished Die Hard film.
Right.
But was there, like, a shooting schedule or something they had to keep to, where they're just like, this has to happen now?
Don't know.
Because I don't feel like the world is. It's not like the MCU where it's just like, oh, we got like 15 movies coming out this year. We have to hit these targets because otherwise the whole structure falls apart.
Well, when this movie debuted, right?
I was shocked to find out it was 2013 because I still had
when did they in 2013? When did they have to get this release out by?
Was it out near Christmas time?
No, it was like Valentine's Day. Because this is the movie you're going to take your Valentine to.
I was unaware of that.
Even when you see when the movie was meant to be released, you're like, someone just doesn't have a that's what it comes down to.
This is like, yes, the ultimate romance of seeing John McClane be a dick to his son.
That's right. In Russia.
Yes, in Russia. Oh, man. That was, that just makes you feel like, some studio head got, kicked in the head by a horse. And they're just like, yeah, we have to get the next Die Hard out by next Valentine's Day. And like, can we at least do it the Valentine's Day after? No, it has to be this one. We've got 5 months to get this thing made. It's inexcusable. Like, how bad the dialogue is and how nonsensical it all is.
That's right. And then Jack walks over to the windowsill with Yuri. And Yuri opens, like, again, there's no way that he's been able to keep this thing hidden for 5 years, on the windowsill in a random hotel. In the ballroom of a random hotel. Yeah, it just makes no there's and then John just walks over to Irina and goes, how you doing? Depending on his intonation, it could sound like he's doing a Joey Tribbiani, or it could be, he's just trying to be nice. But neither way, it doesn't really work.
To me, though, it sounded either like it was a Joey Tribbiani, or it was like an interrogation thing of like, how are you doing? You're ready to crack, right? I'm going to break you now any second. Because, again, I was coming into this, like, contextless. So I was kind of sitting, like, thinking Yuri was reaching into like that tree stump from Flash Gordon, or like the box from Dune, and all of a sudden he was just going to be like, ah! Something. And then for a second I was like, I'm guessing this is father and daughter, or it could be a sugar daddy scenario.
No, it's father and daughter.
McClane's trying to get in the action, like, and it's a full tilt. Like, the inflection is Joey. Like, it is a proper, like, how are you doing? Like, it's like the cultural impact of Friends decades from now might be that, like, yeah, you can't say those words anymore without it feeling like a come on, because that's it lives in infamy now with that. But it was my initial thing too of seeing Yuri and his daughter was like, they really look like the Wish version of like Monica Bellucci and Antonio Banderas. Like, those two actors, they couldn't play father and daughter because it's like too close in age and stuff, but really, like, she's decked out like a Bellucci, and she looks like, yeah, this is kind of like a, it's a Monica Bellucci in the World Is Not Enough she was in. It was like, yeah, it's her doing a cosplay of that character. And then he just has like, oh, if this was like nowadays, even in a C-list budget movie, Antonio Banderas would be playing this guy's part. Like, it's just because Banderas is just doing everything these days. So it's like, yeah, that would be him. But yeah, I had my little takeaway. It was just like, I'm assuming they're father and daughter, but also, it could be a like a sugar daddy, sugar baby scenario. And then it was from that, though, I did only piece together that the hit indie movie Shiva Baby was, in fact, the title is a spin on the term sugar baby. And I only realized that the other day.
Oh,
I've been like,
wow.
I just never got why it was called that. And I was like, there's a Shiva in it, but whatever. And then like, oh, that's it. Now I understand. So it's, a good day to Die Hard did something for me, at
Okay,
least anyway, back.
I'm glad that that helps you out there.
Nudged me towards a realization 4 years later or whatever.
And then her response is fine, and he goes, "Well, how'd you get over here so quick?" So first of all, how is that considered quick? Like he didn't know where she is. It's not like when Yuri was talking to her on the phone, earlier in the week, that he's like,
Yeah.
"Oh, well, I'm 2 hours away." Oh, but you got here quickly. How'd you get here so quickly? It's like, again, I don't know why he says that. And then she goes, "Well, I took the garden ring." Now, this is actually quite funny that they gave us, Chekhov's garden ring by having John, when he's in the taxi at the beginning of the movie, ask about the garden ring, and then, we just thought it was typical chit chat, but here we see that it was meant for us to know, hey, wait a second, John's now going to be able to put some clues together, be able to figure
Yeah,
stuff out.
yeah.
He goes, isn't the garden ring supposed to always be bad, right?
Yeah.
And, she just like grunts. She doesn't really, she doesn't have anything to say.
It was I think too when I was watching it, I thought they were saying gardening, and I was like, what? What? What was it? And then I was worried, like, I might have to actually watch the movie now to understand what they're talking about gardening.
Right.
But no, Garden Ring is like, oh my God. So it all came together, but then in many other ways it did not at all.
And Jack
But
is getting a little impatient with what John's doing, and from the window, so he goes, "Hey, John." And then John just continues talking to her and goes, "Did you get stuck in traffic?" And at the same time, we also have Yuri finds the he finds what he's looking for, and he goes, "I have it, I have it." So I like the way that they're having like these three things going on at the same time. It's done well, unlike the conversation itself, but just the visual aspect of it makes sense. And then
I mean,
immediately,
it's edited well in that it does convey a mounting tension. I'll give them that at least. Like,
right.
you do understand the things. It feels as if th something's about to erupt just by the frequency of the cuts and stuff. But so I'll give that to John Moore, who I was devastated to find out is from Ireland as well when I looked into the director.
Yes, he
I was
had
like,
the
oh my God,
opportunity
he's
to
like.
direct the Die Hard movie, and he will always go down as the director who directed the worst Die Hard movie.
And he hasn't worked since 2016. But
I
we'll get to him. We'll get to
yeah.
him.
And then everything changes, and Alex shows up and goes, "Welcome, Americans."
I will say, for watching these chunks, this guy I liked. Alec was like, oh, he's bringing some pep to this, at least. He's
He's a fun character. He's completely psychotic, but he's fun.
He's not like, I'm not gonna be like desperate to go out to hire that actor though, but at least for what he's doing here is like, no, he is at least like, I'm invested in his performance. At least
And
he's bringing some levity to this whole thing.
the fact that after he shows up, Irina gasps. So she Irina's a good actress because she just came here with Alec. But she's able to still pretend that she's completely shocked.
Just stand
And
there in the hot dog outfit, looking to crash the hot dog car into, like, it's like, I'm just looking for the guy who did this.
that's right. And at this point, Alex screams at John and Jack, put your goddamn guns down, Alex. And then he like shushes them, which is which also doesn't really make much sense. And then what does Irina say to her father? She goes, Papa, what's going on? Again, why? This is her plan. You know, this is her plan that she put together with her father. Obviously, Alex doesn't completely know that, which is also a little bit crazy, but we'll get there next week.
I guess she's just trying to, like, play all sides or something? Is that the kind of thing of, like, you know, I'm playing one side off against the other, but I just pretend I literally don't know anything that's going on to anybody in any regard, then whoever wins and I end up with, I'll be like, I can honestly... Well, you know, I can convince them to be like, hey, I didn't know anything. You saw me say that I didn't know anything about any of this at all. So I could kind of make sure, like, maybe she's just hoping, like, whoever's the victor, she could be like, they'll be like, I guess we can trust her still. But, not well conveyed at all.
No, not at all. And then Alex says again, give me your weapons. And John goes, come and get them. And then, he just starts laughing. And he goes, really? Really? And then, you know, we have Irina getting scared again. And she goes, Papa. You know, he gets a little bit too close. And, she grabs him and then puts the gun to his head. You know, that, and again... Now we know that she's one of the bad guys.
Yeah, yeah. It's
And then she screams at John and Jack, goes, do it. And they put down their guns. And then John says to Jack, I thought you were a problem child. He goes, this part of your plan, Mr. Professional?
I do kind of wish, though, that this had in fact been the script of a planned crossover between the Die Hard franchise and the Problem Child franchise, and they got that they got John Ritter in and that kid to reprise his role, but this time he's playing John McClane's son. That's a bit of a deep cut. I don't know if the Problem Child franchise has any has any clout these days to anybody. But maybe it's due a comeback. We couldn't do it with them. We couldn't do it with Die Hard, but we can bring back Problem Child. Why not?
And then John and Jack, you know, after they put down their guns, so they come in and put zip ties around their hands. Now, do you know the official title of what a zip tie is? Like, what's it really called?
I thought zip ties was the official. Is it like a branding thing? Where it's like, you know, like over here they call like you know, like an announcer in a public building would be called a tannoy, but apparently, like, no, tannoy is a brand. You can't call it that. You know, it should just be called like the sound system or something like that. But I thought zip ties was just the normal nomenclature for that particular thing. Like, what's it actually called?
Right. So it's called a cable tie. It's It's also known as a hose tie, a panduit, a tie wrap, a wire tie, a zap strap, or a zip tie.
Yeah. See, I always thought it was called zip tie because it kind of goes zip. Like, that's it's right. Like pulling up a zipper. So, yeah. Although cable tie makes a little sense because that's mostly what they're used to do. It feels like they were made to keep cables together, and then movies made it so, oh, no, that's what you tie people up with is now these things because they're, like, that's unbreakable right. Or whatever.
Do you know when they were invented?
I'd assume probably like the 70s or thereabouts.
1958, they were known as tie wraps. Initially designed for use in airplanes for wire harnesses. It was originally made out of metal, which I don't know how that really would work with the teeth being metal, and then they changed it to nylon plastic.
I don't know, like, you'd have to be so pretty, like, I guess what kind of metal you're using, like aluminium maybe? I don't know. what the hell you do that with? What really bugs me in this scenario though is that they do John's hands in front and Jack's hands behind.
That was just about to mention.
And it just feels, yeah. So it really bugs. It bugs me in general when you see it in movies when people are like, oh, they're doing the zip tie thing and they go for the hands in front, because it's like, it's barely kind of doing anything, really. You know, you're giving people very easy access to stuff still. They're still going to be able to do a lot with their hands in front. Particularly too with John McClane's reputation. I'm guessing maybe they just don't know what his reputation is.
No, but
He's the
it's
guy you want your
strange that
hand.
they do it differently. You know, you'd think that they would either have them both with their hands in front or both of them with their hands in the back. That's the thing that's
Yeah.
strange here.
I think it's, yeah, it's just the decision. Yeah, I poo-poo the decision at all to have them in front, but you think they would have a kind of standard thing of like, well, no, we both do it hands behind at least. But it's just like, you know, maybe that one guy with the machine gun who's, you know, going to John, he's the one who's like a bit of a screw up, and he's just like, you know, he's got a bit of performance anxiety or something. And he's like, I really don't want to screw up and work today. And then he gets there and he's just like, ah, put the hands in front. I know it's supposed to be. They always tell you to put them behind. Oh, well, hopefully it won't lead to anything. Hopefully we'll be totally fine.
Right. And then Irina whispers to Yuri and you know they're next to each other and he goes, "What are you doing?" And she goes, "It's all about money, Papa." Isn't it always in movies? Millions of
How ironic
dollars.
to be saying this in Russia, you know,
That's right.
infamous communist capital of the world.
That's right.
So maybe like it's always
You
about
think
money.
life was easy for me while you were sitting in prison being a victim? He goes, "But I'm your father, and I am your daughter." So again, terrible dialogue. It makes no sense whatsoever. These two people have a secret plot going, but here they're going to be whispering to each other some strange pieces of dialogue that make no sense whatsoever. Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah, I guess I
It's
go, and I am your daughter's kind of got like a bit of a you raised me to be like untrustworthy and to be always flipping sides on people and stuff like that, like to always be going for the easy win,
That's right.
like yeah. I guess it's kind of like it's a reflection on, you know, McLean and his son too. They just had a little like a thing alluding to a toxic growing up environment of like, you know, no hugs, et cetera,
That's right.
and now this has also been like, oh, well, you know, I'm your father, but I'm your daughter. Like it kind of has that. It's alluding to like you made me this way. So yeah, maybe there was an attempt there at some sort of, you know, thematic resonance, or to be like, well, look at these two,
I
they're
think it's
talking.
more just to try and fool the audience. That's all it is.
No.
Yeah, I don't think it's anything beyond that. You know,
It's
let's
yeah.
confuse the audience as we deal with all the different twists, you know, that type of thing. And then Alex says to her, "We should kill the old man now." She says, "We still need him, but then you can kill him." And he goes, "Thank you."
Yeah. That was a line that actually got a laugh out of me as well. Alex pretty good in that, like his little like, oh, thank you. Like just, you know, he's giddy at the concept of being able to
And I
kill
love
these
how he's
two.
like
Like
chewing on a carrot the whole time.
yeah. My whole thing was as soon as he showed up, it was like this guy is like it's like he's playing as like, what if I was Bugs Bunny in disguise,
That's right.
basically. Like you know, or it's kind of like the twist of this will be that like he's actually Judge Doom's kid or something, and it's just like, yeah, like, I was part toon the whole time or something. He's gonna
That's
do
right.
like the weird eye thing because he's going so over the top, but like, I had some notes for Carrots for the next chunk though, because he's gnawing on that thing for a while as well,
Yeah.
wherever it came from.
That's right.
But no, I feel like it's a conscious effort on this guy's part of like that actor is obviously, you know, he's not gone on to do anything massive in Hollywood, but he does have a pretty decent, you know, IMDb, and I don't know if he just sensed what the vibe of was with A Good Day to Die Hard. And he's like, well, at least I'm gonna have fun with this.
That's
And
right.
he is literally going to like, oh, I'm gonna make it. Like it could have been, I need some business. Give me a carrot. I am gonna play this as if I'm Bugs Bunny, but I'm the bad guy. And it's
That's right.
like, yeah, it's a good, you know, it's a good choice, man. Like
Yeah, but
I'm all here
again,
for it.
visually it's great, but the dialogue is terrible. Like he then turns to John and Jack and goes, "Hi." He goes, "I don't know if I'm saying this right. Hi."
Yeah.
And then like he says, "Do you know what I hate about Americans?" And like they give us they're looking, they're a little strange, and he goes, everything.
Yeah.
Especially cowboys. They're like, what? Where the hell is cowboys coming from here?
Yeah. Now that's part of the whole thing with the with this is that it's really it feels like it's trying to harken back to like oh cowboys, McClane, Hans Gruber calling him Mr. Cowboy, et cetera.
Right.
Even John gives a little he gives a little nod of like yeah, typical. Like it's kind of weird 'cause I'm interpreting it as being like oh the bad guy hating cowboys and him going like a I've been here before, like that kind of thing. But it also could be interpreted as him going like, oh, "I hate cowboys," and him being like, "Well, yeah, all Europeans hate Americans because of the of our still ongoing infatuation with cowboys."
Yeah.
Where it feels like if he was an older guy, Alec, this might make a bit more sense, and he'd be like, "Oh, that's what Americans are like." Like Hans Gruber was like, "Oh yeah, Mr. Cowboys is like that's John McClane grew up in cowboys." Hans Gruber grew up in a time where he'd be aware of what is Hollywood churning out, nothing but westerns. But by a guy Alec's age would be more like Americans and cowboys is like a distant memory. It's kind of like what would what would Alec hate to be like, oh, I just hate, those stupid rogue cops that go bang bang shoot 'em up and defy their captain's orders and always are going on about their ulcers and cliched action movie stuff would be what he's talking about nowadays, in this kind of scenario. If they wanted to go meta with it, that could have been a twist. But the fact that he targets cowboys just feels like very. It's like, did he grow up in like a. Like, it's like, is it alluding to the idea that Russia's only got American media from like the 1960s now or something? Where it's like, oh, that's what all you Americans are into. Oh, you're cowboys, huh?
Well, I mean,
But
I
yeah,
found really
it's
interesting about the term cowboy. A cowboy, is it can mean someone who's reckless. It's like a derogatory thing. So you just call someone a cowboy who's out of control, type of thing.
Yeah.
Which sort of makes sense. Yeah.
Over here it's always like a dodgy contractor. Like anytime if you hire someone to do something on your house and they do a really shoddy job, people always call them cowboys.
Oh, wow.
Because
That
again,
was
yeah.
the next thing I was going to say. You got me on that
Yep.
one. You.
Yeah, that's a it's a again it's in the same family of like oh people who are reckless and who are just careless and just like don't yeah they don't
Didn't do a
take
good
too
job.
much yeah don't do a good job don't take too much regard in their work yeah cowboys basically and you will get that there's a famous clip from Father Ted of a guy going around door falling off his hinges and him going like cowboys Ted they're nothing but a bunch of cowboys. Which people bring up over here constantly because it's like whenever someone's got done a bad job building job, it's because like oh yeah, but no, I took it to mean though that it's just that like it's trying to marry things back to the first movie and it is him talking about like what do I know of America? I know you say hi, and that's how you say like which would be like me going over to like France and been like. Bonjour, am I saying this right?
Right.
Bonjour. I hate
Yeah.
that. It's just and then also unless he's just so he doesn't seem like all that formal a guy, but maybe he's a real thing. It should be hello. This abbreviating things to be catchy is I don't like it. But him talking about the cowboys, I only took to mean that like I just hate the Americana image of a cowboy.
Right.
Because I'm Russian and we all know the Americans and the Russians. Although the thing is that back when this was made, all that died down a bit. Now Americans and Russians are a hot topic again.
Yes. Very
So
cyclical.
maybe if a good day to Die Hard came out now, maybe it might feel a bit more apt, But
Maybe.
at, in 2013, it felt very like I don't know. The whole concept of McClane going to Russia and that being like a oh, didn't really get me either. But I don't know, but, oh well, yeah.
Right, and then Alex starts doing something really strange. He starts like dancing. And as he's dancing, he kicks their guns away and stuff like that. But and then the last line of this segment is he says, "I could have been a dancer. I swear to God."
This guy, okay, what I'll say from this, and actually talking about someone who was recently in the press for talking about Bugs Bunny as well. this film would be somewhat better if Alec was just played by Chris Walken. Because, like, I can imagine Chris Walken doing everything that this guy's doing. Like, because Chris Walken was a dancer, and he does randomly dance in films, and he would totally be, like, an evil henchman who would come in and have this, black, the turtleneck and the suit and stuff, and I can imagine him delivering this dialogue and it being even more entertaining. Kicking away the guns, like all of it really feels like this is high Walken energy. Where it's criminal that they couldn't get him. But the few things Chris Walken might have said, might have said no to. But he was also just in the press the other week of saying that I think Ben Stiller said when he was working with him on Severance that Walken told him one of his favorite actors was Bugs Bunny. And he's just like, I've played several characters just as Bugs Bunny. Which is just throwing down, the gauntlet now of like trying to find out which ones they were, but like right. Go through the Chris Walken filmography, like which ones is he just playing as Bugs Bunny? But yeah, from those final moments here with Alec in this chunk, I really got like, oh, this is it's just heavy Walken vibes, which is just it makes it even more, it's just sad because no against to this guy, but no offense to this guy, but it's like, oh, it would have been so much better though. Had they managed to get the? Had they even thought to go that route with it? But yeah.
But apparently he didn't.
No. Oh, they did, and Walken might have been like, I can't do the accent, it's something like because he'd have to be Russian, I guess. And I don't think I've ever heard him do a non-Chris
Walken accent. Well, Alec is not Russian. He's like Yugoslavian or something like that. He's from the Baltics.
Oh, okay. But even that, though, I don't think I've heard Walken range outside his very distinctive Walken right. voice, so okay. I think maybe it's just like an impossibility.
Right, that's fair enough. And we've mercilessly gotten to the end of this 5-minute segment.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I would say, though, the best of the 5-minute segments as well.
So did you have
it's all downhill from here.
That's right. Did you want to... Well, it's been we're just gonna throw things down the chute at this point.
Yeah.
Did you have anything else you want to say about this particular segment?
Nope. Nothing that can't be saved until that's not still relevant in the upcoming chunks, So.
Got it. Okay. Excellent. So today's segment is Top Cop, where my guests will give their top five movie detectives. Police officers. So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Okay. So this one I would put as...
I have a feeling that you and John might have a little bit of overlap here, but we'll have to wait and
see. I don't know, but we'll see. So just go see, because I've written down a few, and then I've got like ones that were supposed to be like honorable mentions, but then some of them just didn't work out at all. So... one of them I think I'm pushing a little bit in that I really, because I love him as a character so much in general, but he's not strictly a cop. And he's mostly from TV, but he is in a movie. But it is Agent Cooper from Twin Peaks, who is technically, he's in Fire Walk With Me. It's not his best work in Fire Walk With Me. Cause it's
right. You could have included him if you want, because he is in a movie.
Yeah. He is in a movie. But he's also like, well, it's FBI, so it's not really a cop, but he is a detective. He is like detecting, he's doing detective work.
Right.
But he's one of my, like, he's probably like my all time favorite character in anything ever in general. So I felt like I needed to put him in in some scenario, even though you could be like, well, if it's FBI, it doesn't really count. And like, well, what's his great detective work in Fire Walk With Me? Not much, so much in that, really. It's more the TV show that he's doing stuff. But I felt I needed to put him in general anyway.
Okay.
After that, then I would go much in the vein of something I feel this movie is trying to go for, and it's just not hitting. But like in terms of flamboyant, bullshit, crazy action cops, I'm gonna put in Action Jackson. Carl Weathers from the hit movie, like the not as big a hit as it should have been movie, Action Jackson. Of course, the late great Carl Weathers there just passed, I think it was last year. And yeah, really underrated. Have you seen Action Jackson, Rob?
I saw Action Jackson when it came out in 87.
Wow, you're a lucky man. Because it would have been, I would love, it's one of the things I can't imagine it getting re-released in theaters anytime.
Yeah, I
so
don't
it's
think
kind of,
it's
it's kind
out.
of weirdly fallen. It's really fallen through the cracks. As like, it's weird considering it's like a Joel Silver produced action movie from the late 80s. And it's got like guys from all those movies in it. Like it's, you know, again, Carl Weathers of Predator, of Rocky, of, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And everyone else in it is just like, oh, it's that guy from that other action film and stuff. But Action Jackson is like, it's so flamboyantly ridiculous. I think it got wrongfully dismissed at the time for being too silly. But with, you know, 30 years since, it's like, no, this is all amazing that this
So
guy's
when
literally
can
like.
we expect Niles' movies by minute,
On
version
action
of Action Jackson?
the thing is though, if I was to approach any kind of action movie, and I guess this is what I've not really thought of. Oh no, actually no, now no, I'm kind of now conflicted because I didn't even think of him for this list. But I was thinking, me and John have toyed with the idea of the of doing a movie that people always talk about doing, but no one's pulled the trigger on, of doing Demolition Man. Minute by minute, so maybe in our post, you know, bat minutes, careers of like, oh, we're going for Demolition Man, and I hadn't
You
even
just
said
don't want to
like,
talk about Taco Bell.
yes, which we only got over here in recent years, and I've been told is nowhere near as good as the American version, and we had the whole thing because I think over here it was originally they changed it to Pizza Hut as well,
Right.
and it's only been down the line that like, oh, it's a whole big thing. But no, I hadn't even considered like, oh no, John Spartan is 100% a cop as well. He is a, so maybe I'll do a little combo between Rocky and Apollo Creed there, both getting in, and the number four spot have been like, oh no, it's Action Jackson and John Spartan, because he went to the.
If you ever do consider doing Demolition Man, you have to figure out what the three shells do.
Oh yeah, I think that would be one of our questions for the guests. It would have to be. Every guest comes on, like, you tell us your interpretation of what you do with those things. That's now I feel like we definitely have to do it so that can be the bit, basically. But yeah, the two of them, you know, John Spartan went to the future to get his bad guy. You know, not on purpose, but like, he did adapt to the environment around him and still got his man, even though, and him and Action Jackson are still very much in the same vein of like, will completely obliterate entire city streets. With you know they're the good quote unquote good cop you can enjoy to watch on screen because everything's so overblown and flamboyant and stupid, that you know you don't consider the kind of ACAB of it all and the fact that like oh no, this is hideous, you know for tax paying civilians and whatnot who are probably getting killed by this guy, but yeah, a little combo from them in talking about. Dedication to the job and actually being an upstanding cop, even though he doesn't have any kind of glory behind him. I'm going to go for, I think it's Mo Tilden. Tilden, I think his name is. Robert De Niro's character in Copland, basically. I'm sure you've seen Copland, Rob.
Yeah,
Like
of course.
maybe potentially, yeah, back in the day. Another Stallone movie, of course. But like, yeah, I always admire that because like, De Niro's character is, you know, he's a schlub, and it looks like his whole thing is that he's just like, you know, he's sitting in his ass in an office all day going through paperwork, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But at his core, in a movie all about corrupt cops, and again, you think I would have chosen Stallone as the sheriff who eventually stepped
I
up?
would have expected that.
Yeah, because you know Stallone eventually, but then. De Niro's already where Stallone should be. Like Stallone, he's a bit of a dupe, and a bit of a you know, a very very naive in it, and he only really steps up at the end to do what's right. Whereas the entire film, like, as soon as you're introduced to De Niro, he's been working a long time to try to take down the corruption within the police force, and I think that you know again, particularly in an era where people are highly aware of the flaws in the American police system. I'll give it to De Niro as like a guy. He's not a glory hound. He doesn't look cool. He's not a guy out there flexing his muscles, but he's a schlubby guy with messy hair and a mustache with a crumpled shirt, but he is there desperately trying to get the work done for the betterment of the department and for the benefit of, not letting corrupt police officers get away with it and stuff. So I'm putting him up ahead because he was already there fully formed, whereas, Stallone's a bit of like, come on, man, wake up, will you? But I'll put him in there as well. And then also in the vein of like relatable but dedicated sort of frumpy down to earth cops, I feel like I've got to put in Marge Gunderson from Fargo. Again, incredibly dedicated to her work in that, like, she's like, what, 8 months pregnant and she's still out getting stuff done. And just has like a real, and she's very, very good at her job in that she's like a good, thorough detective, and is able to, within the small town community, even though it's faced with, sort of crimes they would never have even conceived before of like this level of, murder and mayhem and stuff, is able to, deliver on the goods while juggling her family life, and also, again, been heavily pregnant. And doing it all with a very sort of, very mannerly, very chipper kind of attitude towards everything. So, I've got to put her down there as an admirable cop character. And then so that's down. I think she's number three. Oh, sorry. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So number two, I'm gonna put down as, and this one's a little difficult because it's like, which iteration are you going for? But of course, I'm a Batman. Host or Bat Minute host. And I feel I got to give a shout out to Jim Gordon as a top cop. Particularly again in the cesspool of Gotham City. Now it just depends on which version you're talking about, I guess. And I'm kind of conflicted because, Pat Hingle's version is the one where we've spent the most time with, but he's the one I would instantly chuck out the door because Pat Hingle's Commissioner Gordon isn't much of a presence at all. He also just seems like a guy who's way, way, way too dependent on Batman, as is the Neil Hamilton version from the 60s show, where it's just like they literally can't scratch their ass without Batman showing
That's
up.
right.
Whereas, though,
Oh no, I can't
and so
find
I'm
my watch.
conflicted.
Let's call Batman.
Yeah, that's exactly it. The end of Batman Forever is just like, all this stuff's happening. What are we gonna do? Like, oh, Batman's not showing up. What can we possibly do without Batman? It's like, do your damn job, you idiot. But I'm conflicted because I kind of want Jeffrey Wright is my favorite cinematic Gordon. It's mostly because I love the vibe he brings to it. I just love Jeffrey Wright's performance and the way he keeps calling Batman like boss and chief and stuff like that. And I love their camaraderie. That they've got this unspoken, like, you don't know why these guys are together, why he trusts Batman so implicitly, why Batman trusts him implicitly. They say that in the movie of just like, we don't know who to trust, but he's just like, they actively say to each other, oh, I absolutely trust you. And we don't know why. But I love that vibe that they are like, oh no, we, despite the insanity of the situation, I 100% give, my trust to you. But we don't get to see all that much of Gordon in terms of like, him as a person outside of that. So I feel that I have to give it to the Gary Oldman version because we do chart his course. And he, once again, like, De Niro in Copland, a guy operating within a very corrupt system, trying to weed out the corruption throughout the, trying to do what he can with what he has. You see him through the course of three films, basically, having to make various sacrifices, give up, his family, et cetera, stuff like that. Things constantly going wrong to, and you completely understand why he would trust this vigilante over the police force. You see him again mounting task forces and stuff to try to, go and try to find honest cops within a cesspool, the cesspool that is Gotham City. And then also constantly facing insurmountable odds, but showing up and still doing the job, whether it be fear toxin, flooding the streets, the League of Shadows, or the Joker just going on a domestic terrorist, rampage that just seemingly has no end in sight. And then, of course, even at the end where he actually steps up with, you know, it's Batman's idea, but Gordon is the one who has to enact the whole thing of, like, pretending that Harvey Dent didn't kill all these people and stuff like that, which then has repercussions later on. But he's willing to take that thing of, like, you know, when he's called out on doing, quote unquote, the wrong thing by Joseph Gordon-Levitt. You know, he's the one that got, like, you weren't there. You didn't have a friend like I did with, you know, make sure that we all stayed clean and stuff like that. I made the right decision in the time and stuff like that. So yeah, Gordon, I think Gary Oldman's Gordon, I think, is the most rounded. He's not my favorite version, but just because of, I think Jeffrey Wright's more charismatic in the role. But he is the best rounded version of Gordon we have on screens currently. And he does very much lead into, though, my top cop, which is not John McClane.
I wonder who it could be.
Well, that's the thing, though. You think, I mean, maybe you're thinking Batman himself, but no, because he is a Dark Knight detective, but he's not officially a cop. And you know, he even says in one of the movies, like, "Do I look like a cop?" So I'm actually going to give it over to a guy who. Potentially, Gordon's actually a better guy than him in that he's more innocent in things. But in terms of dogged dedication to the job, I'm gonna have to give it to a guy who, you know, whose movie did influence The Dark Knight at least. But I'm giving it to Vincent Hanna, the Al Pacino character from Heat. In that, like, he is a guy who's. It depends on whether you view this as a good thing or a bad thing, I guess, really. But you see throughout the course of the movie this guy's dogged, determination to get this one criminal that he, you know, they have a weird kind of yin yang kinship with each other. But you see his family falling apart. You see that he just does not live outside this job at all, basically in any functional manner. But, you know, he's prepared to go in and take high-risk scenarios, stuff like that. But he is, as a cop, a good cop, you know. He's got the dedication to the case, and he will not stop until, you know, the criminal is caught. Which is, I would think, in a cop, a thing you would want. Again, potentially controversial, though, Rob. I don't know if you're, what's your opinion of Pacino in Heat? Like, is in terms of do you think he's a good cop in terms of, like, reckless endangerment or not having a good work life balance and stuff like that, or would you admire his tenacity in trying to, like, make sure that the job gets done?
I think he goes a little overboard.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think maybe him and Gordon can kind of, like, they can sort of, you know, swap places in my mind sometimes where it's like, well, you know, But again, Gordon still is so dependent on another guy doing a lot of the work for him. Whereas Vincent Hanna's in there, he's much more hands on, you know. But at the end of the day, though, you know, he got De Niro no matter what. So what if his marriage fell apart? And so what if his daughter nearly killed herself?
That's right. Yeah, come on.
But in terms of what I think of, like, when people say to me, like, oh, movie cop, in my mind I get the image of Pacino out in the street with a machine gun trying to take down bank robbers. Like, that's and it's a classic. What's his job as a policeman? It's a cops and robbers scenario. It literally is, like, you know, the most cliched version of police work you can think of is taking down bank robbers. That's my list anyway, as in terms of You would have thought I would try to get Michael Keaton from the hit film One Good Cop I mentioned about a guy
who's a better friend than he is a cop.
Yeah, but one good friend doesn't sell tickets.
No,
one good cop.
No, exactly.
It's like, oh my god, you gotta go see this guy. He's a cop.
That's right. All right, so now we will play our daily game of State Your Motto. Okay. So I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but the title of Die Hard 4.0, you know, Live Free or Die, or actually Live Free or Die Hard, but the state motto of New Hampshire is Live Free or Die.
Okay.
And the whole idea is, you know, Independence Day, all that. So I decided to make up a little game where I will randomly give you a state, and then I will give you three choices as to what is the true state motto of that state. Now, all three of these mottos are real state mottos. It's just a question of whether, which one matches up with the one that you're given. So, I mean, I don't know how much you know about U.S. geography and stuff like that, but so your choice today is Idaho. Do you know where Idaho is?
I just know Idaho is shaped like Ralph Wiggum. That's my... I just know I'm Idaho is my entire knowledge of that state.
Okay. All right. So it's...
And also that Keanu Reeves had his own private version of it.
That's correct. That's right. Okay. So your three choices are A, we dare defend our rights. B, let it be perpetual. Or C, John is his name. Now remember, all three of these are real mottos of either states or U.S. territories.
Yeah. I feel John is his name is a diehard tagline there somewhere that you've slipped in some sort of...
No, no, it is a real state motto.
It's a real state motto.
It's a real state slash John is his territory name. Motto, yes.
Wow. Is it the state of living free and dying hard? John is his name. Jeez Louise. So what were the other two again? We live perpetually?
We dare defend our rights or let it be perpetual. Uh-huh.
Let it be perpetual. That's. I'm going to go for... I'm very curious about let it be perpetual. Cause that sounds like quite a dense philosophical statement. Knowing that Idaho to me strikes it because it's like a... we call it the middle belt, kind of like that sort of that dead area in the center of America where it's just surrounded by land.
No, actually, Idaho is towards the west coast. It's like in between. It's sandwiched in between Montana and Washington.
Okay, I'm gonna go with the let it be perpetual with them because I feel it doesn't strike me as a very oh it is oh good. Yeah, because it sounds to me like they don't have much going on in Idaho. So all they have to do is be philosophical about things.
Exactly. All right. Excellent. So, Niall, would you like to tell people where they can find you when you want to talk about a movie that actually you like?
My podcast, if people want to hear more from me, is the Bat Minute podcast, which is where we break down and talk about the Batman films. 1 minute at a time. We're several seasons in, so we've covered 89 up through and including Batman and Robin and Mask of the Phantasm. And this year, we'll be coming out with Bat Minute 66, where we're going way back to talk about the... it's not very cinematic, but it is a masterpiece. The 1966 Adam West Batman film. 1 minute at a time. And so you can find us on all good podcatchers. We can find us on Spotify as well. And we're also on YouTube. And our social medias is like our Twitter's dead because we just got rid of it. But we're on Instagram and on Facebook at the Bat Minute Listeners Cave, where we have still fairly active sort of engagement with a lot of people on there, just talking about things Batman related or just Batman adjacent. A lot of Superman chat because Superman's on the verge of coming out. So if you want to join in such conversations, you can do so at the Bat Minute Listeners Cave.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Niall, do you want to go through some torture and come back again tomorrow to keep talking about this movie?
I suppose so.
Okay. You're a good sport. You're a good sport. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue. But it ain't me, it ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one, no.